Blog Talk Radio.
Kosha, why we can't go outside and play today?
Baby, because there's too much happening out there. We got misguided people in this world who turn to violence and use guns, and sometimes innocent people like you and me get caught in the middle of it.
Well, what's wrong with them?
Baby, I don't know. They need change in their lives.
Welcome to the premiere for Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with your host, Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. This is Sonia Perdue, and I will be Mr. Carter's co-host for this show. We want to thank all of you for joining us this evening. Mr. Carter, good evening to you.
Good evening, Sonia. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you here.
Well,
Mr. Carter, although this is your premiere show on Blog Talk Radio, you are not new to the news or media industry, and we're going to talk about your background in the industry. But first, tell our listening audience what you are hoping to accomplish and what they can expect by joining us on Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Well, what we hope to, and what we not only hope, but Black Wall Street is more of an implementation type of organization. So what we're looking at is the directions and activities that sustain and increase black businesses. So all of our activities, and we have maybe about 14 activities, ranges from black contractors in the neighborhood, the legislation of the Illinois Senate on the Black Wall Street District of 75th Street. We're meeting tomorrow regarding a Black Wall Street District on the west side of Chicago. We're focusing on a Black Better Business Bureau. We are engaging in other legislative initiatives that address the issue of black versus minority. So overall, people that get involved with Black Wall Street, what we're looking at activities and actions that actually sustain and increase black business. That also goes for the beauty industry. That also goes for a trade in which we're looking at in the black farmers, where we're working with the Reverend Al Sampson. So the range is large, from contract procurement to private works that happen in the community to the ma and pa. Our thing is to look at actually the visualization that we have sustained and increased black businesses. So
That's a large agenda, Mr. Carter. Covers a large area. Let's go through and break some of this down for our listening audience. We're speaking to Mr. Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. Now, let's start at the beginning so they'll know who you are, Mr. Carter. Tell our listening audience about your background as a Chicago newspaper man first, so they'll know a little bit about where you're coming from.
Well, that can be very intense, but raised in many different parts of Chicago, mainly known for growing up in Robert Taylor Homes on 53rd and State Street. And my background is similar to a lot of youth, from being a part of the Meanester Society, as some people may call it, to being involved with the Black Panther Party, moving on to the Black Student Union, going to school at UCLA, coming back here to Chicago, and doing community organizing work. But even prior to that, that entrepreneur spirit led me with even being a paper boy, with having the most papers delivered in the city of Chicago. Back then, it was the Chicago American, and then it was the Chicago Today paper. I have no idea that I would round up being in the newspaper business, in which that happened working with public housing residents of Taylor Residence United Towards Harmony. I was working with the Chicago Defender as an account executive, and the residents of Taylor Homes asked me to come aboard, help them with a newspaper, and upon helping them, it fell in my hands. And in doing so, I converted the paper to South Street Journal. And in that, my organizing roots have kept South Street Journal at the cutting edge of news and what's going on, to the point that Columbia University of New York is now writing a book, putting together a documentary, and a web presence for an archive of the 16 years of South Street Journal. But one thing that I've noticed is being in business and being a entrepreneur, businessman, owning a newspaper, the reflection of the black media tends not to be a reflection of its priority of its community. If you look at most black media, black newspapers, for the most part, their advertising base was dependent on other folks. So as I began to continue to see this decline in black advertisers with my business, I seen that Black Wall Street was the key to help to sustain not only the community, but my personal agenda of my newspaper as well. So, and you look at other newspapers, community newspapers, they have a reflection of the advertisers from their community. For the most part, Black newspapers do not. They have a reflection of more of corporate advertising opposed to the ma and pa type of businesses. And that's due to the Black community have not kept up the pace as it is with other ethnics when it comes to business. So South Street Journal moved on the agenda of Black Wall Street as the host organization to push this. And so for the past 2 years, 2.5 years, really, we've been engaging in that and coming up with concepts and directives of what we can do to help sustain and increase Black businesses. And with that, there's been a host of many organizations from around the city, and even to the point that it gives us great admiration to be even working with the Chicago Black Business Network based on the results of where we are now on this here radio program, which I think that it gives us a chance to communicate with the listenership of the Chicago Black Business Network, along with other networks in the Chicagoland area. And taking that in consideration, that Black Wall Street is not just a Chicago organization. It has its roots from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and of 1921 to its national headquarters in Oakland, California, where they have had their Black Wall Street for at least since 1999. And then there's maybe about five other cities around the country that's involved with the name of Black Wall Street. We all have our own initiatives as reflecting in our particular cities, but we're going to be bringing all that to a head in August 2010, where we're going to have the first national Black Wall Street Summit that will be held here in Chicago. And so we're very grateful for that, that the other cities will want to host this first convention here in Chicago, along with those other cities are very ecstatic to a great extent that Black Wall Street Chicago was instrumental in making sure that the Illinois Senate passed a legislative bill in support and acknowledging the Black Wall Street of 75th Street here in Chicago. So there's a lot going on, and I hope that we can channel that energy that Black Wall Street has through the listenership of the Black Chicago Black Network, where we can not only network, but we are also going to implement a lot of that networking that we discuss on this here program.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks, and Ron Carter is the host for this show. We're doing an introductory here because we want our listeners to get to know Mr. Carter, the agenda of Black Wall Street Chicago, and what you can anticipate in future shows. And I wanted you to go ask that question about your background in Chicagoan and as a newspaper man, because I wanted the listeners to know that you have some longevity here and that you've been an activist for a long time. You're not the new kid on the street.
No way. That's right. That's right.
No way. No way.
My age goes along with that, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. You've been a part of the community for a long time. You're very knowledgeable about the community as a business person and on the political front. And as you told me, you are a newspaper man. Now, I want to ask you, Mr. Carter, congratulations on that collaboration with Columbia College. That's great news. That's the first time I've heard that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more on upcoming shows. So that sounds like a great honor. You should be very proud. And I'm glad
you're
taking the time to recognize you, too.
Right. Well, even with honor comes work. So we got some work to do that, and that's going to definitely be it. Matter of fact, they have created a a archive of every issue for the first 15 years of South Street Journal on their website. So from the first issue of South Street Journal up to the end of 2008, every issue that you would ever want to see regarding South Street Journal, it is online. So they have done some good work within the last year and a half archiving each issue and developing a database of the type of stories that we have written and that we have addressed. So if you ever was mentioned in South Street Journal, you can go to that website and you can find your name will pop up as well.
That's wonderful. We're going to place that on our website. You listen to Ron Carter, Chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. I'm Sonia Perdue, founder of Chicago's Black Business Network.com. And this is a collaboration between our organizations for the very fact that we know that there's a lot of work to be done, and that's what we're doing here. And this is just the beginning, and I think this is going to be a very exciting and successful venture on our part. So I want to know, Mr. Carter, tell us about what took place down in Springfield last October, the designation for Black Wall Street Chicago.
Well, that was I believe that took place, it took place October 28th of this year. We've been working on the designation of 75th Street, which is a business strip from State Street to Cottage Grove. It's approximately about 3 mile stretch. And it just so happens for the past 30 years or more since I was a kid, that particular business strip have approximately 120 businesses. And of those 120 businesses, we did a tally and we found out that of those 120, 114 of those businesses are black. That is not the norm for many cities in the city of Chicago, in the United States, pardon me, in relationship to New York, Atlanta, Oakland, even our original base of Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we asked Senator Donnie Trotter to present present Black Wall Street as a resolution of a proclamation. He put a proclamation from his office, but he went further than just a proclamation from his desk. He actually presented the Black Wall Street District through the Illinois Senate, through committee, through hearings, to the point that all 52 senators of the Illinois voted in favor of the Black Wall Street organization and 75th Street designation as a Black Wall Street district. As you get involved in a lot of things that one may encounter, you don't look at the full impact because you're doing the work. And as you do the work, you continue to focus on exactly that. But it took Oakland, California, our chairman there, Michael Carter, no relationship, is to say that what we did here in Chicago, it turned the tides for other Black Wall Streets around the country. It even turned the tide for Tulsa, Oklahoma, in which we're moving in the spirit of. Because for those that are not aware, Tulsa, Oklahoma was a city that the black economics controlled the whole city, to the point that the white merchants and the white community came to Greenville of Tulsa, Oklahoma to get loans, to shop. And that black community sustained itself beyond the norm of not just a black community, but as far as the other communities, non-black, that's around them. As they made that high success, I think that, I don't know if that was you or no, I was talking to some other member of Black Wall Street, Jan, and she brought it to my attention that they were so great, the only way that they could be stopped is they had to be killed. And to the point that that's what happened. Of Tulsa, Oklahoma, there's a record of maybe about 3,000 blacks that were killed and murdered during the Tulsa riots. And again, that riot sped off from the old term of a black man whistling at a white woman. And it got so intense that there were bombs actually dropped over that particular community of Tulsa, Oklahoma. So in the spirit of Tulsa, Oklahoma, we had the Illinois Senate with Donnie Trotter to pass this legislation. And with Tulsa, Oklahoma, Oakland, California, Atlanta, those other cities see what we did here in Illinois as a big victory for them, where they're going to push that same agenda through their state senators as well. So it was a major task. I think that what we have done was created and living black history. And even though as major as that is, there's still a lot of steps that we got to go. As our president indicated that it was Wall Street to Main Street, we say extend that on to 75th Street. And as we passed that legislation here in Illinois, it just so happened it is the home base of the president. So it's going to create a domino effect around the country, and definitely an effect here in Chicago, where even tomorrow morning we will be on the west side of Chicago, where we're going to have dialogue and discussing the Madison Street in the heart of Chicago from California to Austin, to change that to the point that we have a Black Wall Street District consciousness. And with that consciousness, we're bringing in black businesses that want to set up shop on there. So the message of Black Wall Street, even though it have a consciousness of people being aware, it also have an agenda of implementation. And that agenda of implementation is carried out and reviewed every 3 months, where we have our summits. So we're monitoring ourselves as we monitor others in the agenda to sustain and increase black businesses. And this legislation from the Senate floor give us that position of not only reaching out for implementation, but also in a form of negotiating what a Black Wall Street district should be about as it comes to this stimulus program that is now throughout the United States. Even when we look at the Congressional Black Caucus, they have a concern now where they don't want to sign off on the business bill of the president due to there wasn't enough meat in that bill to support black-owned businesses. So we got to be conscious of that, and we're thinking that the term of Black Wall Street is a term similar to, if you want to use the term black, or if you want to use the term African-American. Some people even use the term still Negro. But there is a term that associate with the black experience, and that is what we're gauging for that spirit, but with implementation and with follow-up and monitoring what we have accomplished and what we hope to accomplish on a quarterly basis. So the agenda is broad, the mission is broad, but the idea is that we're still a little bit, not a little bit, but really behind the eight ball on a lot of the business development. But I think that we should kind of take that in consideration, that the Civil Rights Bill itself is no more than maybe about 40 or 50 years. So we're behind, but we also have moved in a little great stride based on actually the Civil Rights Bill that was passed during the 60s. Before that, we still had the Black Wall Street District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, but yet we still had the racism that that kind of pulls us away from the success, even if that racism is covered from the business of selling drugs to moving up the corporate ladder of major corporations. So we've got a long way to go. We hope and we are looking to engage the listeners in a role that we will be focusing on the agenda of sustaining and increasing Black businesses with examples as well as with a focus of having that Black experience to buy Black. We got an agenda here.
We have a great agenda here, and we're going to move forward on it. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks. Our host is Mr. Ron Carter. We're just taking a little time because this is the premier show to share a little bit about Black Wall Street Chicago and Mr. Carter's background. Our calling number is 347-326-9477. Leave your company information and website links in the chat room. The caller number is 347-326-9477. We have a few people in the chat room. I see our first guest is on the line as well. We want to ask you a couple more things. Congratulations on that designation. We're going to come back. We're going to keep that in as we go through every Thursday. We're going to keep that in the forefront of our listeners' minds, and we want to help them have a greater understanding of what that means throughout the Black Wall Street districts in America. And we also hope to have all of those from those Black Wall Street districts across the country on a show even before the summit. That would be a great show, and we're looking forward to that. Also, one thing came up yesterday. And I'm sounding like a newspaper person myself, aren't I, Mr. Carter?
You got it. You're on the roll.
One thing came up yesterday. I was looking at VON. It was about eight council persons there and about a few people from the state representatives there. It was an hour-long show. It's not much you can do an hour with all those people. But I came in like at the end, and one thing that you mentioned here in the opening, distinguishing between Black-owned businesses and versus minority businesses, and one of the, and I think her name was Ms. Hunter, I'm not sure, she said that out of the stimulus package, there was about 1.6% actually designated specifically for minorities, and 50% of that was designated only for African Americans or Black, because the other 50% was going to the other minority, white women. And that's something we're going to have to talk about more on a different show. That was interesting to me that you would mention that tonight.
We definitely have to look into that. That's very seriously with this legislation to back up that type of action from government.
Okay. And another thing about Tulsa, how, you know, what Black Wall Street actually represents, the memory of that horrendous act or acts upon those people, upon our people. We're going to also keep that on the forefront of our people's minds as they have come to greater understanding of what that really means. Once they stop that there, they put so much fear, where was it starting again? It hasn't. It took a long time to come back to this point again, almost, because
Tulsa was an economic engine of Black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but there was Black economic engines around this country. Now, even Chicago and Harlem, if you of New York, Bronzeville. I know that this is a national program, so maybe I can give a perspective of Bronzeville here in Chicago, in which it is a Black community. But in the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1960s, Bronzeville, this community was a I guess, a community that ran the economics of its own. And it ran it through what was called the policy, where the Negro Baseball League was funded. Joe Louis' boxing career was funded. You had teachers and low-income and upper-income living next door, where Quincy Jones, Nat King Cole, the host of people lived and stayed in Bronzeville, and they controlled the economics of this here particular community. But one part of that economic drive was the policy, the numbers. I think a lot of people remember the numbers in the Malcolm X movie where he was and Bumpy in New York, where the numbers were, I think when I was a kid, the man come knock on the door and give my mother a little slip, and that was her numbers. And right today, those numbers, the policy number, is called the Illinois State Lottery, in which the Illinois State Lottery made that first it was outlawed, and as it outlawed to the policy number, that took away a self-sustaining economic base. So they didn't do it with the bombs as they did it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but they did it through the law that stopped this Bronzeville development of black businesses. And as they did that, starting in the 1960s and 1970s, now this Bronzeville community, as we indicated, bronze based on the family, is almost integrated with others. And that population shift from a stable black community to a community where the streets such as 35th Street, 39th Street, 43rd Street, 47th Street, 51st Street, 58th Street, all of these commercial strips were and originally were based on the Jewish, and then it turned black owners, and now is Mid-Eastern and Koreans. But all this here happened just in the 80s and the 90s, and so something happened to the point that I would say no Mid-Eastern knows how to get off a plane and come right to 47th and King Drive without some instructions. Somebody got to tell them where to go and how to get there and give them the resources to open up a business. So the relationship that the United States government have with Mid-Easterns, just the way the United States government have relationships with China, where they have educated their students, we have to look at the big picture, even to the point where Black Wall Street is at, is that the year 2040 and the year 2020 will be submitted to the city of Chicago in 2010. So we have to look beyond the immediate needs to what the future is going to be, and which is in the process of planning. The city of Chicago did not plan to increase the surrounding loop by 175,000 residents without looking at that economic base of what those 175,000 residents, 175,000 housing units, not residents, that has increased. So as the black population of Chicago have decreased and others has increased, that's also a shift in the economic stability as well. So we got to look at this whole big picture, that it's not just Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was physically blown up, but also the political and social agenda as it relates to many communities, black communities throughout the United States. I had to put that in that little history point, Sonya.
And you know what, Ron? I love it. I absolutely love it. There's a lot of ways to kill a dream. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
That is absolutely it.
Right.
And this is going to be a history lesson to people, and we're glad to have it. You're well versed in all areas, and we're going to work you over in every area.
Be as a newspaper man. I better be.
Well, you know, there's a different kind of newspaper man and media person out here now, and I'm not going to say much about that right now, but What do they know? They know how to read. So what can I
tell? Oh, yeah. Well, some newspapers create the news. Some newspapers make the news. We like to try to be a part of both.
I got you. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, and this is Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks, his premier show. We're going to go to a break, and then this is what we're going to do. We're going to make a couple of announcements of some events that Black Wall Street has coming up in the next week, and we're going to then turn the show over to Mr. Carter. His first guest is on the line. So this is what we're going to do. We want to thank you for joining us, and we're going to be right back. We're back, and you're tuned into Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with your host, Ron Carter, Chicago chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, and this is Sonia Perdue, and I will be Mr. Carter's co-host for this show. You are listening to a song from about 1975, The Pointer Sisters, Yes We Can, and that's pretty much why we gathered here this evening, because we believe that we can. Before we go back to Mr. Carter and go to the phone lines, we'd like to make a few announcements. First, Black Wall Street Chicago has opened up their organization, and they are now accepting new members. Come out and meet Mr. Carter, the board members, and the committee members of Black Wall Street Chicago this Saturday, December 12th, from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the offices of South Street Journal, located at 449 East 35th Street. This is a membership drive. The doors are open for everyone to join. To RSVP and for details, contact the office of Black Wall Street Chicago at 312-624-8351. To RSVP, call 312-624-8351. That's this Saturday, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. One more announcement before we go to our phone line and back to Mr. Carter. Reporters Harry Porterfield and Cheryl Burton did a half-hour segment on the now-designated Black Wall Street District and with the chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago, Ron Carter. And you can watch that segment on Saturday, December 19th, on Channel 7 WLS here in Chicago at noon and at 6 p.m. We want to share that information to you, and we will remind you again a little bit later in the show. We want you to be a part of that also. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. Our caller number is 347-326-9477. Our chat room is open. You may leave your company information and your website links in the chat room. Press the number 1 if you'd like to speak to our guest or if you have a comment this evening. We will say the last 4 digits of your telephone number, and you will know that your mic is live from this point on. Please identify yourself and tell us what's on your mind this evening. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago, and our host is Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago. Mr. Carter, are you there?
I am here and enjoying the program.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. We have about 4 people on the line, but what we're going to do is we're going to go to your guest, Mr. Obi Wordlaw, and I'm going to turn the show over to you, Mr. Carter. Good evening, Mr. Wordlaw. You're on the air.
Good evening. How are you doing? How you doing, Mr. Wordlaw? How are you, sir? And let me say, you are to be commended for sticking with Black Wall Street and finding it here in Chicago and all the wonderful things that you've done. And I'm proud to be a part of it.
Well, we welcome you.
I learned a lot from you today.
Oh, you did? Well, that's good. Well, we've been glad. I remember when you first came, when we first had our meeting, I guess a year ago, and you came by the office, and I think I had my schedule mixed up, and you reminded me that you got your schedule down packed. And we had a meeting, and from there we was moving on forward from there. That's right. So you say Obi, when most of the time we say Mr. Wordlaw, you say, call me Obi. What's that all about?
Well, one thing is that I try to maintain humility because I am a little older than most of you young men that's participating in this Black Wall Street. So, again, my hat's off to you. So I like what you're doing, but mm-hmm. So that's why I always ask you to refer to me by my first name.
Okay, Obi. Well, tell me how long you've been in business, and even before you went into business, did you have a drive or interest to enter business, and about what age did that start?
I'd say about 17 years old.
And
I've been in business ever since.
What does that business consist of?
Well,
even at 17 years old.
Donut shop. I was part of a donut shop, ice cream parlor, liquor store. When I got older, I'm an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. And so that has been your driven from 17 all the way up to the present.
Yes, until we finally opened up a medical equipment and supply company. When I met a young lady who had a doctor's degree in nursing, and she came on board, and we decided to do a medical equipment and supply company.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me go back just a little bit at 17 years old. Was that the norm of you, or was that the norm of your peers about going into business?
Well, I'd say it was something that came from my father, which he never wanted to work for anybody else, and even though he did, he always instilled that in us to always try to have our own because we recognized that in order to be successful and in order to be a viable component of your community, you had to kind of own your own.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the nucleus for where that came from.
Are you the only business person in your family? Is that something part of your family traits, or did you kind of just step beyond the employment right into business, or is that something from the rest of your siblings or family members?
Well, family members, all the family members, cousins,
uncles, nieces, all of them have been business-minded, so it seems to be a family trait.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. I think that that is through, would you, how would you compare then based on what was traded in your family to where the black community is today? Is there a resemblance or there's not? And if it's not, why? If it is, how you think that continues?
Well, you mentioned some things that kind of had me thinking about how things took place over the period of years. And some of the things that came about, you used the phrase constantly about they. And that's always, to me, seems to reference other ethnic groups having some kind of control over us. What I think we both know, Webb Evans has constantly been talking about the attitude that we have. So I kind of listened to Webb Evans and some of the other people older that's been out here for quite a few years. Over the years have been talking about the attitude has to come from us and we have to change. And if we lift ourselves up, then nobody else can put their feet on us. Mm-hmm. So we have to change our attitude and move forward on how we conduct ourselves in a business atmosphere and create wealth for our own community.
Do you think that that is that we have to step up a little bit more compared to other ethnics when it comes to business and entrepreneurship?
I think we already have it. I think what has been done to us is that we've been debriefed on how to control or how to be in charge of our own community. And not instilling in ourselves, and every time I get around some youth, let me say it this way, every time I get around some youth, being the age I am, which I won't say at this moment, I literally apologize.
How about a later moment?
Okay, at a later moment, I'll tell it.
Okay.
But what I apologize to the young men and women in my community because we still have not yet passed down the mantle on how to create your own wealth. And that's something that older generations have got to start doing a better job of, and that is in taking our youth almost when they come out of their mama's womb and start teaching them how to be entrepreneurs and self-sustaining in their own communities and controlling their own community.
Well, there is a case where my understanding with the Japan, where they have that type of a structure of gearing the youth on what type of vocation they will have as they get older, even to the point that here in Chicago, with Lake Meadows right across the street from Black Wall Street office, where that used to be a 90% black population community, and now it's about 50% Asian, to the point that the Asian community of China has paid up in advance for the education of their youth. And as they have done so, they get their education from schools such as IIT, and then they are mandated to come back to China to fulfill that education that they got here, specifically here in Chicago. Do you think that a mechanism such as that is practical, needed, or possible for the black community, at least here in Chicago?
Well, see, my position is that if we drew a circle, and in that circle, everything that we touch has economic components to it, and we need to be talking about how, when we are sitting with our families and our children, if you're using the Asian model, I wouldn't necessarily use it other than for the reasons of that's one segment of what somebody is doing. But there's many examples that's even coming from us if we start sitting down having dialogue on what each one of us are doing and where the money is in our community and how we can harness our money, then the examples can come strictly from us, i.e. it can come from me, it can come from you, it can come from the young lady that's there. So we don't necessarily have to target any particular ethnic group, but the bottom line is that we recognize where all things that we touch have money or economic components to it and start teaching our youth that, then the creativity among us will start emulating the things that bring about wealth in our community. And
well,
as you mentioned something before, is that in Black Wall Street, other ethnic groups was coming to our community in order to borrow loans. Well, this is an individual that I'm not going to lambast because of the fact that we all hold him in high esteem. But if we use if we talked about Jackie Robinson went to the Major League Baseball League. But we can also talk about healthcare and everything else in reference to this concept I'm mentioning now. When Jackie Robinson left the Black Baseball League, we were getting standing room only from all ethnic groups to our stadium for $3,000 or whatever that figure was to go play with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
When Jackie Robinson went and started playing with the Dodgers, we lost millions of dollars from leaving our stadium.
Right.
But that also, I'm in the medical field,
okay.
That also when we were allowed to go and join the white medical associations, we left our medical field.
Mm-hmm.
When we were as attorneys, when we were allowed to join the white bar associations, we left our association. So
mm-hmm.
if you drew a circle, then the only thing that comes to my mind is that my attitude was wrong, and I got to really be de-brainwashed in terms of how, and I think Webb Evans always say, if we start buying from each other and start thinking about creative ways to utilize each other, which we already do, because 90% of the businesses hire their own people.
Mm-hmm.
So when we right. talk about other ethnic groups, the
mm-hmm.
Asian that you mentioned, the one thing for sure is that charity begins at home. So you take care of your daughter, your son,
mm-hmm.
and everybody else first.
Right.
And
well, you know,
Right.
A matter of fact, I even had to put on my investigative head as a newspaper, and I went to an Arab store, and I just had to ask them the question, why don't you hire the Black community? Naturally, he was surprised, why should I ask him that question? But he got relaxed, and he responded by saying that first you hire who you know, you hire
exactly.
who you trust, and you hire your family.
Exactly.
And that then there is another question of whether you're going to hire someone else. You brought to the Black Wall Street table the concept which you have, I think you have trademarked, follow the money A to Z.
Yes.
Can you give me an example of how that may apply to your business and how that can apply to a entrepreneur that just have not even started business yet?
One of the things that we've tried to do with that concept, and that trademark is pretty much all over the country and some parts of the rest of the world, because we do a lot of traveling and we articulate that fact. One of the things that we're saying that before you get caught up in the ambiance of whatever it is you're doing at the moment, if you happen to be sitting around with a group of people and you have a cup in your hand or you have a bottle in your hand or you're watching TV, before you get caught up in the moment, what you do is you dissect where the money is in that environment. So, for instance, if you got a cup of a bottle in your hand, who made the bottle? What happened? Who put the design on it? Who's marketing it? Those kind of conversations we have not yet started having enough of around our children and our families and when we go to family picnics and churches and et cetera. So that's why it came to me that you and I need to start talking about economics when we're in a room. My grandson came over and visited me one day, and he said,
Grandson.
Right.
Are we getting close to that moment, aren't we?
Right, we're working on it. He said, I enjoy sitting with you and having a beer. He's old enough to have a beer.
Oh, we are getting very close to that moment, aren't we?
Right. Let me say this here to you. Before we have a beer, son, you and I need to talk about where the money is. If after we talk about where the money is, then I'll have a beer with you, but not before. So we're saying that we need to start doing that so that our children who are sitting at our feet start listening and hearing about where money is or where economic opportunities are. Mm-hmm. So every time I'm in an environment, I try to interject something different. Like right now, they're looking for a spaceship to collect the nuts and bolts out of space. Let's have that conversation in our family.
Mm-hmm.
One of our children who are geniuses might decide to come up with some kind of business that will relate to that process. So that's where Following the Money from A to Z comes from.
So it may be with your concept of following the money from A to Z, there probably need to be a course. But in the absence that there is not a course, how are you actually fulfilling that as it relates to others that cannot look at that bottle in their hand and think about where is the money from A to Z?
Number one, by being part of Black Wall Street, you've introduced a concept where we have a Follow the Money A to Z every Wednesday morning. We had talked about that. We created a think tank in the Black Wall Street where we are able to sit down and think about ideas and where you might would think about where there's money, and we talk about how to extrapolate the wealth from that project, how to go about getting into that kind of business.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing that now with Black Wall Street.
Well, tell us a little bit about your business. You, how long have you been there? What do you do? Are you more of a commercial or retail or wholesale? And I think I've seen some notes where you're ranking somewhere in the top businesses in the state of Illinois.
We are, and we also rank, I think it's 125th in the nation as one of your leading businesses, black-owned.
Well, very good. Congratulations. That's very much up there.
Well, thanks to my business partner, which is Dr. Julia Bowens, and her foresight, we've moved quite rapidly. Plus, we just relocated in a larger facility here on the west side of Chicago because we believe in keeping our business local. And but we've been in business 23 years.
So what are some of the products or services that you provide?
Well, we manufacture wearing apparel, which is i.e. isolation gowns and shoe covers and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
We distribute all over the country. We also have several Department of Defense contracts, so we're doing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
We need more business, we need more contacts. Following the Money from A to Z, anybody that know anybody in purchasing that works for the federal government that buys products, then if you happen to be a cousin of yours, introduce us.
So you mentioned that your business, you're located on the west side, and you have opened up another location again on the west side. Why aren't you in the suburbs, or why aren't you in the loop, or why aren't you in on the south side? Why are you on the west side of Chicago?
Well,
because I understand that if I can that. Location of a business is very important. So what makes that so important to your business, or is it beyond business that you located on the west side or for some other reason?
Well, you mentioned something about having a talk with one of the persons on the south side, and you asked them why would they not have other ethnic groups working for them, and they told you that they would start with their families and friends first. Well, we pretty much feel the same thing, same way. We like to hire from the community so that we would be a positive entity in our community. And on the west side, we recognize that a lot of businesses were either, which is no problem with the ma and pa stores, so we decided to bring a different kind of business in this area. And we're encouraging other manufacturing firms and larger corporations to come and join us.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned something about the hair care product. We would like to see Dudley Hair Care Product bring a company over here on the west side of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. My understanding is that, which I definitely would be in attendance, that there is a drive to have a Black Wall Street district on the west side of Chicago, the same as what was done on the south side. Can you elaborate on that and what that means or what that could mean, and if that's actually possible based on the street that has been generally identified as Madison Avenue, in which it has a very low black entrepreneur or businesses located there. So how practical or what's the direction there and why?
On Madison Street, if you go back 40, 50 years, has been a mecca of black businesses because, again, of our attitudes and not teaching you how to shop with me, then we've let other things take place that removed us from this area. But this is actually as much as 75th Street. The Madison Street has been definitely a street where you had your major black businesses. And even today we are anchored by a business, Edna's Restaurant, which has been here over almost 60, 70 years. We got Big Old Movers, we got MacArthur's, we got a lot of black successful businesses on Madison Street. So this is a good area to start as what I consider it, even with 75th Street, as a pebble in the ocean. And the wave effect will be when we can establish large communities, not just one street, not just from California to Austin on the west side and 75th Street, but when we actually have encompassed a community, because 75th to Madison Street is not really a big stretch. What if we make sure that area really has a large proponent of black businesses?
Well, is that a practical dream, or is that a practical action that can be done based on the makeup of the minority of blacks that operate businesses on the west side?
Yes, it's a goal, and those who are creative and who understand the fact that you mentioned something about, and I hate to always use other ethnicities, but you mentioned that they had a plan. So that plan that they had encompassed them doing the things that they did to help enhance their community and their country. Before 25th Street and the little village, when the other ethnicities came to Chicago, started coming in groves to Chicago, that was primarily Lithuanians and a white area. Now you can go all the way to 63rd Street, all the way to North Avenue, and you'll see nothing but another group of people. So, yes, it's very possible if we change the attitude. And this is why we came out with the phrase, follow the money from A to Z, because everything that we touch, when we start learning how to find where the money is and start working that program, then it's unlimited where we can go. And
well,
a group of people that's come out of slavery, you're doggone right, we can make this happen.
Well, let me. How long have your business been in existence now?
This business has been in existence for 23 years.
So, what do you contribute your success to? I understand you're saying follow the money from A to Z, but is there another mechanism that you have been using to actually make have your business to be as successful as it is? I mean, what do you contribute that to?
We've always been sitting down, creating ideas that would move us forward, and working hard toward those goals. We've had a strong business plan on our direction, so we actually sat down and wrote out the business plan on where we wanted to be 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, 100 years from now.
So you actually still follow your business plan?
We follow our business plan.
How often do you review it?
I'd say about once a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that has been your guide and your monitoring piece on exactly where you are and where you're not and where you want to be.
If you don't have a plan that you can follow, then you're just all over the road. So you got to sit down and put your plan together and put it in action. And I think I heard you, and that's what you're doing at Black Wall Street. That's why you're to be commended as to how far Black Wall Street has traveled up to this moment. And I know the vision that you have is, you know, hopefully we will soon, but very soon, have an area that is like they refer to Chinatown, Greek town, et cetera. Well, we want Black town, not necessarily African-American town, but Black town.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the Chicago Urban League, at the time that the Black Wall Street was formed in 2007, of May 2007, really we got formed about March 2007, the Chicago Urban League kicked off its Project Next. Not to take anything away from the Chicago Urban League, but one of their clients of what they done was they assist and evaluated businesses to help them move to the next step. One of those businesses that they helped was the Chatham Foods, in which upon their evaluation, it turned out that, matter of fact, Chatham Food came to a Black Wall Street summit, and they made an announcement that they were going to open up a new store, in which definitely the community was delighted to hear such a news. And then maybe about 4 months later, Chatham Foods announced that it was going to sell its business. Not being in the meeting table of Chatham Foods for them to come to that conclusion, can you have some type of insight of what could drive a business person to say they're going to open up a store 1 month and then be about 3 or 4 months later indicate they're going to close the store or sell the store? And is counseling helps you to say that with business counseling, can it help you to say that you are, it's time for you to retire, or it's time for you to close the store, or time for you to open up a new store? And is that based on the business plan? Can you have some insight on how a store could make that type of decision?
Yes. Number one, all the things that you mentioned, the owner, was that retirement age or he needed to sell. Like right next door to me right now, we have a Spanish gentleman who has a family, large family dollar stores ready to sell. The difference between his store and the mentioning of what you just did with the food store is that their community has been training their people to come in and buy that store. You and I have got to keep doing what we're doing in terms of training our people to start recognizing that this community belongs to us. We need to keep the businesses, the food businesses especially, in our hands. So we need to have entrepreneurs who are willing to step up and purchase that property. But what keeps happening is because we have our attitude has not yet been totally molded to start looking out for yourself first, then those kind of things take place. But there's nothing wrong with the fact that he decided that this was too much for him. We just needed to be able to help him find another business person to take over that store.
Mm-hmm. Right. I understood that he did try to reach out to other potential black businesses that was interested in the food store, but he was not successful in doing that, and where he ended up selling it to another ethnic group.
Let's talk to L. Sampson, and why would not the black farmers buy the store? Since we're doing some what ifs, but
okay.
My only point is that the attitude has to change among us. I've been involved in the same thing when I had a liquor store. I understand the concept, but what happens is none of us are offering the right buying price for his business.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I have to teach me and teach our public to start trading with each other, which is what Webb Evans constantly talks about, and that way he would not have had to sell, or he would have been able to get prime dollar for his property where he would have been able to sell it to another one of us. So
right.
All those components are very necessary for us to start really building a vibrant community.
Now, there is a initiative part of Black Wall Street that addressed a Black Better Business Bureau, in which definitely is being tailored after the Better Business Bureau. Do you think that a Black Better Business Bureau is practical, and what would you think that would be the major components if it is?
See, I think you keep hearing me say follow the money from A to Z, so I see it as an economic component. I don't have any problems with, I don't know what their charter, how they see themselves fitting into the economic component or how we see that working, but every aspect of economics ought to be considered in our community. So if the Better Business Bureau becomes a success, then hopefully it would help us find ways to get money out of the banks to make sure, or wherever there's a financial institution, that would help us be able to buy and purchase better pieces of property, or buy that store, or buy other businesses. So I don't know what direction they plan on going in, or what direction
mm-hmm.
it's going in. But
well,
there's a
as
lot
far
of
as
variables.
Mm-hmm. Right. As far as consumer relationships, for example, there is a stigma regarding the black businesses when it relates to sometimes services, as it relates to maybe black contractors, where they're not as diligent on the job as others. The concept of the Black Better Business Bureau is to try to be a mediator when those type of issues arise. Do you think that that is a practical means that needs to be used in order that for consumer, black consumer, and black business relationship? Is that necessarily needed?
I wouldn't have a problem with being a part of that, but I think it goes way beyond them. I think it's I need to be, when I say I am talking about other business people need to come to the forefront, and we sit down and dissect the things that the things that are not letting our people come buy from us. Why do other people can put on a TV program and show a Budweiser sign, and all of our people will jump up and go buy a bottle of Budweiser? So what is it that we as black businesses are not doing to motivate the people to come and spend their money with us? So even if you put black, what you're referring to, all, you know, I'm sure that you've been in many stores that were not black, that you were not satisfied with the service. But in the meantime, it didn't drive you away from that store. You might even, you know, like the stores that you just mentioned, the meat is probably not smelling too good, but we still...
Mm-hmm.
We still go in there. So what is wrong with our attitude? So our psyche, the business people, i.e.
Right.
all the people I know that are in business, should have a program that will help motivate the people to keep doing business with me regardless, and help teach me how to take care of you. But most black businesses, first of all, we need to stop giving out bad information, and then we need to also not have negative comments coming out And when we see a black business that's not doing what it's supposed to do, then let's have the Better Business Bureau or another black group of black businesses go and talk to that business.
Well, how much do take it to another angle here, even though we looked at the historical Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where it was self-sustaining and it was definitely on the rise of a business capital, but the overtone of racism is what ended it. How much do you look at racism have a part in black business and entrepreneurship?
I look at that as you and I have got to start talking about how to work with each other, because the only thing that overcomes whatever that is you use in the racism card is that if I'm making enough money or if I got my stuff together, then you and I, number one, will be okay, and we will be prepared to undertake whatever adversities come our way because we got enough wherewithal to take care of our game. And I see that as overcoming racism and everything else. But that also means that I got to teach my children how to make money.
Well, would you contribute the recent legislation and laws from the Supreme Court that banned the use of contractual procurement from identifying a particular nationality to lump all nationalities in the sum of minority, even to the point that there is broken down by minority, women, and then there's another category of gay? Is that a deterrent from black businesses, even when it comes to contractual procurement with government agencies?
Well, see, again, I always put the blame to the extent that you and I need to sit in a room together and find out what's, as they used to say in the olden days, what's out there against us. And once we discover what that is, then we sit here and come up with a program to help circumvent that. The reason why those people are able to come out and pass those kind of laws and et cetera is because they have figured out how the person with the purse strings can move those people to do what they need them to do. So if you and I, not to go biblical, but there's a phrase in the a scripture in the Bible that says money answers all things. That means that if you got some drama, and if you got some money, then you can work with that drama better. That don't mean the drama's not coming. So you and I need to have money conversations on how your children and my children can start playing with the economic components that liberates them, and that is in every sector of our society.
And well, there was touch. There was understanding this is a national talk show. But here in Chicago, there was a alderman by the name of Ed Vidodiak, and this is the time when Harold Washington was mayor. After Harold Washington passed, Vidodiak became a little bit more liberal in his way of thinking. He made the remark that the council wars between black and white in Chicago was not about race, but it was about power and not about race, and race was used to sustain power. Is that a practical business direction, even to the point, if I can add on to that, the corporations, when they are promoting their business, they say the best way to get to the black market is not through direct advertising, but through promotion. And race, you have a major factor in how they direct their marketing strategies. Do you think that that is the case?
I think that's a, permit me to say it this way, I think that's a good idea by the other group. I just think you and I need to understand how that's done and learn that as a lesson so that you do it. Ronald Reagan said, and I'm not a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, I won't say which one I am, but Ronald Reagan said when he was running for president that we're going to, if the black community keep 5% of their income in their community, they won't need public aid, et cetera, or anything else. From that school, if you and I convince each other how to motivate the people that we do that we're dealing with, people that look like us, if we can convince them, not if we can convince them, once we set a program together to convince them that their best interest is to do business with themselves, then at that moment we will get other ethnicities to start doing business with us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
whatever it is that is necessary so that we'll all be getting a piece of the pie.
So if we look at parts of Chicago where there is Chinatown, Greek Town, Little Village, which is Hispanic, and so as we look at those, especially if we look at Chinatown, where they are self-sustaining and they are have an economic base within themselves to the point that no other group would think about opening up a shop on Chinatown in Whitworth, but yet they do not have an elected official that's guiding the economic stimulus to Chinatown that we know of.
They do because they identify with their community, i.e., China and wherever they came from, Korea, et cetera, et cetera. But the issue, and I'm not saying we boycott anybody, but one of the key elements is that if you keep on eating Chinese food, and it's not necessary for them to change their ways. Now, if you want to have an effect, then you and I have to strategize on how to make some changes that causes people to consider not treating us that way. Because economics is what drives, it's a whole bunch, since you mentioned that group. I hate to single out any one group because I'm always dealing with us. But if you look at the fact, there's a whole lot of little stores over there that ain't making no money.
Mm-hmm.
So if we sit here and just use them as an example, which is what I don't like to do, because I realize that whatever other ethnicities are doing, we learned some of theirs, but we got some black examples that we can take to make our community work. And
who would you say that are some of those entrepreneur examples or business people in the black community? I know that there are many, but who would you say kind of influenced your direction? Or is it still going back on your father?
I'm still going back on the whole, we can go all the way back to Marcus Garvey. We can go all the way back to how we were treated during slavery.
So did Marcus Garvey have an influence in your way of thinking when it comes to blacks in business?
Exactly.
Okay.
Not only him, but Martin Luther King, even Jesse Jackson.
Martin Luther King in business?
Do you know that Martin Luther King was, you said it's a national show. But anyway, some of the things that took place was not because he was talking about I have a dream. Some of the issues what he was dealing with was national and economics.
Mm-hmm.
So once he started going beyond that point, I think if we really looked at some of his other speeches, we'd see where he was talking about making some money.
Yeah.
So
the term of cashing a check. The check is insignificant.
Right.
Okay.
So that's why I'm saying to you when I mentioned Jackie Robinson, if you're gonna take and pay a guy $3,000 or whatever it was that took him to the Dodgers once they came over there and saw all their people coming to the game, and we lose hotels and bars and every other thing, that money components, popcorn machines, et cetera, et cetera, then you have to realize that the game is on how to take the money out of your hand.
Mm-hmm. So what would you consider yourself? Are you a
private business warrior or a masterminded decision-making businessman? How do you describe your style of running a business?
All of the above.
Do your staff jump when you walk in the door, or they are happy when you come?
They don't like to see me, but I jump when I see them. I tell you that because I'm very humble to have, mm-hmm. because I recognize that in order to have work or own businesses, you must have people that work for you that don't have a problem with coming to work, that don't have a problem with being creative, because you can't grow by yourself. You need help. So mm-hmm. I have that kind of staff, and I really do have a business partner who, without her, this company would not be where it is today. So I'm very proud of my relationship with my people.
Mm-hmm. So you keep relaying to your business partner. Who is your business partner?
Business partner is Dr. Julia Bowen. She has a mm-hmm. doctor's degree in nursing,
mm-hmm.
and she's been very instrumental. Like, I'm an entrepreneur, and she is a tactician in terms of the medical field. She knows more about the medical field than I do. So mm-hmm. she sent me out to do all the dirty work.
Well, how did you know whether to have a business partner as you establishing your business? When do you decide that it was time for a business partner, or are you going to be the head nacho and everything that's going to fall under your direction, or you need to have someone to be a business partner? How did you come to that decision, or when did you know that it's time to come to that decision?
I have all my life recognized that in order to build anything, you needed help.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get help, you had to be willing to share. And so I haven't never had that problem. Even as a child, I was brought up sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a problem with a business partner, but mm-hmm. Sometimes it's difficult finding the right mix, but I've always looked for that.
Mm-hmm. Do you? How would you give that type of advice to others based on, for the most part, a young entrepreneur that have the gusto that they want to go into business and they feel the drive to, if it may be, to be the boss or to be the honcho, or to realize that they may need to have a business partner? How is it a way to determine that based on one's personality?
Well, I don't know how to answer that other than to say that I know in my heart of heart that people need people. And if you don't recognize that, then somewhere down the road, even if you grow large, however, whatever large is to you, you got to recognize, number one, you didn't do it by yourself. And number two, if you intend to grow larger, you're going to have some people working with you. And you're going to have to be willing to share the limelight and share that space.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at Chicago as far as its business leadership. I guess this is not a total good example, but the Johnson Publishing Company, naturally for years it has been the top business in the United States. Oprah Winfrey is here. Ariel Capital Management is here in Chicago. You have this organization called Chicago Able that have at least a minimum of 52 members that are all millionaires. So you have a great mixture of successful businesses here in Chicago, but yet it seems as though that there is a major gap with all the success that black have achieved in business. What would you contribute that big gap between those? Then again, there's a lot of black millionaire businesses that are young, in their 40s, per se.
Right.
But yet, there still seems to be a major gap. What would you contribute that to?
I contribute that to not having the right attitude. Again, I always say I don't like to speak negative about anything, but our attitude, we need to change our attitude. This is why, again, we came up with the slogan, following the money, having a money conversation in our families, because right now every person that you mention, and they probably, I don't even know if they would agree, but I guarantee you it's a lot of truth to it. Every one of us are not comfortable to the extent where the money that we have in our coffer, we believe that if we lost it today, we could get it back tomorrow. All the people that I know from another persuasion, because of the cooperation that has been passed down throughout their history, then they have been able to at least go to someone else if they run into a dollar problem. And I think somebody's always talking about Donald Trump. Well, how many times has Donald Trump been close to the brink of not making it? And he was always able to go somewhere else. So it's that kind of comfort zone that is not yet permeated throughout none of the people that you mentioned, in my opinion. Like, I don't believe, and I couldn't say this for sure, but in my opinion, I don't believe Oprah Winfrey is safe with the $1 billion, because there's not many other billionaires up there with her where if she lost that money, if too many people came at her, she could have a comeback. So it ain't just her. It's all of us, because of our attitude. We got to change that on how to work with each other. And those are some of the reasons I believe the gap exists, even though I know that the glass is half full. It's not half empty. It's half full. So I think those things are changing with young brothers like yourself and other young entrepreneurs. And the more we talk about where to look for the wealth and how to harness the wealth in our community, then that's going to change 5, 10, 15, 20, and 100 years out. So it is changing, and you're part of that. So Black Wall Street is doing a yeoman's job in bringing this forth.
Well, with the host of many different organizations, business organizations here in Chicago, for example, Chicago have 77 different communities. And in those 77 different communities, approximately about 40 of those communities are Black. With that in mind, the concept of changing the attitude, are you referring that has to be something for the individual or for a community as a whole to close that gap?
I think it's my responsibility. I think it's your responsibility, and those of us who are like-minded, to recognize that we have to, if we keep on doing the programs the way we've been doing it, then we're going to keep on getting the same results. So we need to sit down and strategize those long-term and short-term goals for our community, and for lack of a better way to say that, a business plan, a direction, and start measuring each step and moving forward.
So you have organizations such as Chicago ABLE, which is consists of mainly Black millionaires. You have the Chicago Urban League with its Entrepreneur Project Next, and you have organizations such as Rainbow Push Trade Bureau. So, and then you have a host of Chamber of Commerce throughout Chicago. Do you see if it's necessary that those organizations come to some type of collaborative agenda in order to move forward or to help change that attitude, or does it continue to rest with the individual to change that attitude?
Well, it's always individuals, but if you haven't been taught anything, then you can't necessarily move that forward. Like you mentioned something about being raised in the project.
Correct.
I know a lot of people who have come from the projects, that friends, me and everybody else, that have come from the projects, but because the programs were not there to help create thinking entrepreneurial brothers and sisters, then you got a matter of a few people that came out and said, well, I made it, look at me. but there was not a program that put in place to save a lot more than that. So when you say, so what we need to do is create programs on how to do that. And once we started doing a better job of that, then you and I will start to moving our community forward. So even with those communities, that, I mean those organizations that you mentioned, to me the only one that the one that I really would like to work with are the business people, because every community, as far as I'm concerned, the business people, even with your high, schools of higher learning, the curriculum is set up to help enhance the businesses and help grow those businesses. So you and I have not put a program together for our schools of higher learning in order to send, have our offspring come back into our community and help us grow our community. So,
so again,
the mindset has got to come from me and you.
So even going back to your father that set an example, and your families that many have that entrepreneurship-driven attitude, so you somewhat, even from your father or your own driven, you still had an example of what to follow. Are you thinking that we still need more examples to follow in order to close this gap, or is it still rest upon that individual?
Even though I mentioned my father, the neighborhood, some of the, my uncles helped me. Some of the older men in my family helped. Like we need to be doing the same thing in our community. We can't. You know, sometimes, I don't know if you have any children, but sometimes you might preach and preach to your child, and they not pay attention at that moment. Not saying that they won't ever pay attention, but the person that they listen to, if you all are all on the same page, then you can send him to your brother, and he will give him the same information you gave him. He'll pay attention. He or she will pay attention to that individual. So a program needs to be put in place, or is being put in place, or has been put in place. We just need to identify where they are so that we can capitalize, you know, take advantage of them so we can steer our children in those programs that's going to help them learn how to be community-minded for themselves.
Right, yeah, I can recall when my daughter, who's 23 years old now, but she was she made a pledge to herself that she would not enter the field of operation that I'm in. She just was so staunch on that, that, Daddy, I'm not going to public relations. I'm not going to newspaper business. No, 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 no. Then when she got to college, she entered journalism, of all things, and got her degree in public relations and ready to come back to Chicago to take over. I don't know where she got it from, but she got it. She, you know, she some kind of way... what I did kind of moved her, but at the same time, I don't know if it contributed to what I did or was in the genes, but something got her where she's moving in the same direction that I did. So I guess, as you stated, you never know when that's going to spark, as long as you're setting a roadmap, and sometimes it's a roadmap that you don't know that you're laying down, but it does happen, and it can happen.
Right. I was in a restaurant here a few days ago, and the guys was talking about how bad our children are. And again, I don't like to even hear that. But the first thing I asked them, because they were talking about the gangbanging, even though I know some of the things going on now is worse than what it was perhaps when we were growing up.
I asked them
how many, it was eight of them sitting at this big table, how many of you all were part of the gang? Now, they were 60 and 70 years old. It was only one individual sitting at that table that had never been part of a gang.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your legacy? Did you leave your offspring?
Mm-hmm.
So now you and I, instead of talking about each other, we need to come up with strategies and concepts on how to work with each other so that we can liberate our children, make sure that the educational system is put in place to help liberate us. And
mm-hmm.
when we start doing that, then we won't get, we will start having some unity among us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
And we're having it, so let me say it that way.
Mm-hmm. What is a question, then, that one should ask themselves before starting a business?
Am I willing to dedicate the time that's required to see it through?
Mm-hmm. And is it a matter of if a person believe in what it would take to run a business, or is it still a point of the personal drive opposed to what it takes to run a business?
Well, the drive, I suppose, because a lot of, like, for instance, I'm in the medical field not because I planned being in the medical field. I owned a liquor store, and I wanted to own a series of liquor businesses. And somehow I find myself into the
Do you drink?
Field. Nope.
You don't drink it. You go get into it. Okay, all right, all right. Is that follow the money A to Z or something? What's going on here?
Well, you know, I don't drink anymore. Let me say it that way.
Okay, all right. So you're looking at the, is it still that that principle that you have, regardless of your drive, is more of what it takes, more than your ambitions to be in business?
You know, you have to ask you that question, because for each one of us, there's a motivating factor that's sometimes different from others. Now, what it was for me is I never wanted to work for anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always been the motivating factor for me. And
so
I figured that if I became successful, I would have a better heart in helping others than if my brother or sister did that. So I'd rather for it to be me. So I always ask the Creator to make me the lender and not the borrower.
So when you look in the mirror, do you see an entrepreneur, a businessman, or what do you see when you look in the mirror?
A very grateful individual who has been fortunate enough to reach this level and do some of the things that I do.
Do
and
you
I thank God for that every day?
Do you expect that your company one day may outgrow you?
I believe so, and I'm hoping so, because this is why my business partner. She probably don't want me to tell her age, but she's 46 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost got her. I got her by a lot,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully, I know with the kind of determination that she has, this company will be here 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, how do you handle setbacks in the business? I'm pretty sure all this time you have been, but you definitely have experienced some setbacks.
Same as opportunities. Because you're supposed to learn from those. Those are not, it's not a setback. It's an opportunity to learn on which direction you should be going or how to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to let other people down and quickly to say no on your decision making?
That's not letting anyone down. That's making a decision on how to move forward.
Mm-hmm. So how do you actually address the many, I guess, proposals or sale calls that everybody have the right answer to improve and sustain your business? How do you handle those type of outside forces, so to speak?
We have regular meetings in our office, and we also start our meetings out with a Bible verse from every employee. But we have regular meetings, and when we get through, we have a little pep rally, and then we go out and start knocking the walls down.
Mm. So you actually done to build a spirit among your staff as a means of keeping you all together and keeping you all focused?
Yes.
Okay. So how many people have you fired over the years?
A lot. But I don't see me as having fired them. I see them as fired themselves. You notice that you never fire anybody if they, everybody that comes in, if you tell them or ask them, what do you want, I mean, here's what I will pay you. And they say, well, I'll accept this pay. Whatever that is, then you expect for them to earn that pay. And mm-hmm. if they're not earning that pay, they're not. You're not firing them. They're firing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're saying, I don't want to work. You know, it's like a brief story. This lady works for a meat store, and the owner finally sells the store. And a new owner came in with a brand-new cash register, started counting all the pennies, started weighing all the meat. She said, I'm going to quit because now I can't steal no meat, so me and my girlfriend don't have to buy no meat no more. You know?
Mm-hmm. So she made a business decision
Right. So, you know, that was, he didn't fire, she fired herself. She about to steal a man blind, so.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you don't fire anybody, they fire themselves.
Okay.
And this is what I teach my children and my grandchildren. Whatever you agree to work for, give 110% and learn everything there. Because you never know when you might either want to start your own business, run that business, or et cetera.
Well, let me get it on a take it on a little social. I don't know how to put it this way, but some of the brilliant young entrepreneurs in the black community so happens to be well organized, structured drug dealers. How or is it practical to try to, well, even go back, many of our famous leaders were in the drug business. This rapper, 50 Cent, claims that he was in the drug business before becoming a rapper and becoming a businessman. Malcolm X was a drug dealer and a numbers racket guy. How do that criminal element and the, I guess, the fine-tuned business management. I could never be a drug dealer because I don't think I have the discipline to handle the different personalities that would come along with that may be selling drugs. But how do you transcend that type of element of business to legal business? Is it too late to do that?
Well, see, that's probably the wrong question to ask me, but the object is to give more opportunities, more change the attitude of those people, change the attitude of our youth, give them opportunities, and et cetera. But you also, if you look around this society, regardless of what group you're looking at, they have the same issues that you and I have. So, and I'm always saying this, is that you can't change anything if you don't have no money or you haven't put programs together to help change that. So in order to stop those kind of things or put a dent in that kind of stuff, you got to have some wherewithal and some power to do that. So you and I, go ahead.
Mr. Carter, Mr. Wordlaw, we have about 12 minutes left on this show, and I wanted you to know we do have a caller on the line. Can we take his call now?
Please.
Yes, of course.
Thank you so much. Okay. You're listening to Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks with the chairman, Ron Carter, of Black Wall Street Chicago, and his guest, Obi Wordlaw. Caller, you're on the line, 2065, you're on the line. You have a question for Mr. Carter or Mr. Wordlaw?
Well, I just wanted to say that I thoroughly enjoyed, hi, Mr. Wordlaw, this is June. Hi, Ron.
Hi,
June.
Hey, I thoroughly enjoyed Wordlaw's true and passionate encouragement about changing our scope and our position and our attitudes. And that's the hard groundwork that hopefully that Black Wall Street Chicago will do. And I just wanted to share with some of our listeners out there that some of the plans that we have for the first physical designated Black Wall Street area is that we will be working with the entrepreneurs on that street, first of all, for the holiday season, to promote our Spin 75 on 75. And with that, we're hoping that everybody will go out and spend a minimum of $75 with vendors on 75th Street. And we know that that's just a small offering or portion of your holiday expenditures, but we're going to start there, and hopefully that will ring true in your heart and also in your wallet. And we are doing everything from streetscaping, asking for enhanced lighting. We want to put on that block, we want to start a business incubator over there. We'll be looking for one of our academic institutions to possibly put a satellite location over there. We're hoping that we will be able to develop some green ecological businesses that will jump right into this new green economy and start and spend off over there. So Black Wall Street Chicago is looking for all those people who have great ideas, and that we can continue the tradition of OB, who launched off into this wonderful medical industry, and also all of our predecessors who did everything from designing the stoplight to cotton gins and, yeah, and everything you know. So we've got a lot of work in front of us, but we have to create that atmosphere and that place where everybody will feel safe and know that there is a future. Right now, so many people feel as hopeless. So I think, Ron, do you think that Ovi spoke to the hopefulness that's around here?
Right, and you sound like a true board member of Black Wall Street. You really got the carryover of what we're doing for 75th Street. And
Thank you.
Yeah. So, June, let me ask you, since you're here, what is the how do you feel the relationship with the concept of Black Wall Street as it relates to the community at large? We have been talking about the businesses per se and the business point of view. What is the community sentiments what you feel as though it may be when we're talking about a Black Wall Street district? How does you think the community can identify with such a term?
Well, our community can identify with such a term. We just are not familiar with the tools and the mechanisms to make it happen. That, as Obi has said, has been masked and hidden from us for so long. And the few of us who have been able to kind of peek behind the veil, we haven't had an opportunity or maybe the energy to share that information. So our community is hungry and is ready for it. And not only our community, our city has to have it, because
right,
if small business strips, such as 75th Street, 87th, 43rd, Chicago Avenue, West Madison, if those fail, then what's quote-unquote mainstream businesses, they will fail, because all those people, one, who own a small business, they go out and they spend at a level that is engaging the mainstream. And just imagine that multiplier, as my old econ teacher used to say, that multiplier effect is what you want to happen. Now, we want to give the velocity of that dollar. We want to keep that V value in our community, true enough.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that the urgency, I hope that there's somebody out there who is listening to us who realizes and will pick up the mantle, that realizes that our communities, our business strips must survive, because their survival is based, America's survival is based on our survival.
Well, would you both think that the community at large then is ready to make that move as a whole, such as engaging in the Black
business and buying experience?
I think so. And June, since I talked a lot, I'll let you do the answering most of that. So, your comment.
Well. Certainly, we want to hear from you, hear your words of wisdom and your concepts on that. But and I'm probably just echoing what I've heard you preach so often. But I do believe that we are ready for that. I believe that what we have to do, our job in Black Wall Street, is to make the presentation as compelling as possible, and so that they will engage it and that they're educated. They get educated down to their very cell and microfiber of their being that they realize that this is what has to happen.
Right.
So what is the next step then that you all, even though I'm being the chair, yes, I do know the many agendas that we have that we're working on, but what do you all feel would be the next major step to really bring that Black business experience and buying power that Black Wall Street need to engage in itself?
And I hate to tell you this, but I want us to wrap this up in like 4 minutes. So each person, just take a minute, because we're going to come back with all of this again next Thursday.
You got it.
We're enjoying this so much. It has been such a wonderful, wonderful show. Mr. Wordlaw and June both, and I'm sorry you waited on the line so long, June, and our other callers, we're going to catch a breath next week so we won't miss our calls. But this has been a great start for us. We're on the line with Ron Carter, chairman of Black Wall Street Chicago and host of Black Wall Street Chicago Speaks. And this is our premier show, and we're very excited about this entire agenda. We're going to go into a show next week, and then we're going to start again in January with some very exciting guests. And Mr. Wordlaw, we're going to have it set up so we can come out and do a personal interview with you with this A to Z concept, because we want to take an industry, break it down, or take a product and break it down so that we are teaching people about how to look at the economics of everything that we do. Mr. Carter, can you close out the show for us, please?
Well, first of all, we got to really, Sonia, thank you for this opportunity, making this available to Black Wall Street. I've been looking at the Chicago Black Business Network for a while, and it kept on creeping on me and creeping on me, and you have, if whether you accept it or not, you have took Black Wall Street to an extra level of communications, and not just based on this online presence, but what you have contributed internal with the organizational growth. So I definitely have to, I don't know, you say wrap it up. I'm the host, but I'm a hosting it to you for what you have provided, not only Black Wall Street, but what you have provided to the Chicago Black Business Network as a whole, that we are able to network and communicate with the direction that you have done and you have provided us to have, and for the city of Chicago. And again, it's the World Wide Web, and you have made Chicago Black Business Network just that, worldwide. And so all kudos and credit to you and your network and your vision to make this here possible. But as you stated, we definitely going to have some programming and some Mr. Wordlaw, Obi. Appreciate you not only for your insight that you have given us tonight, but what you have given Black Wall Street with your support and your insight and pushing us. Now, you sometimes act like a man in the background, but you definitely have laid a groundwork for us to follow. So, Sonia, what we got coming up?
Okay. What we've got coming up is a membership drive for Black Wall Street Chicago next week at 445 East 35th Street. That's December 12th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. We're inviting everyone out. The doors are open. We want to see you there. We want to thank our guests. We're going to have them back again. And I want to say Thank you, Mr. Carter. And I want to tell you, I'm not as familiar with your ward and you as all of you are. You sound very familiar with each other, but I want to tell you something. I'm going to leave tonight playing this song by Curtis Mayfield. You know why I'm here? Because this is something that I believe in. We'll see you next week, everyone. Have a great evening.
Good night, all.
Tomorrow now.
Got it.
Many miles and a little more you'll live. But how many times in your years to live you give? I wanna give a little lesson to you. Now and then it may be of some use. A thought that may sure. You more and more
something to believe.
Someone to believe in. Woman and man, since time began, sacrificed. Sometimes wise with the ways of love, kind of nice. Oh, and then the luck becomes somewhat hard. Bad advice helped to pull you apart. Money blues, you lose the family. And that ain't for me. I gotta
have someone to believe in.
Loving partners come in order when you start a friend. Holding hands and then much more.
Right back up and leave it there, knowing we need a little truth. I mean, just a little something to believe, a little someone. Everybody wanna go to heaven, but don't nobody wanna die. May as well have your heaven on earth for someone to believe. Love, take on love and go with love.